Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Random Chatter. This is our review show for this is July 25th. We're over halfway through the year. I can't believe that already, but we are flying through things, and we're flying through a lot of content too. So we now have a couple of weeks since we've done a show like this. So we
yeah,
a little longer than normal, but
I've missed you guys.
I wouldn't go that far, but
well, obviously I'm out of sorts because at the end of our episode of Force Chatter. Which we just did with Savannah from the Dorky Diva. You pointed out that you think I closed the show out by referring to the Force Cast.
I thought I heard that.
And it's funny because the Force Cast came up in that episode, and then I've been talking to someone I met through an online dating site, and she said, "Do you know you have a wiki page?" And I'm like, "Really?" And it was all about the Force Cast. So then she's like, what was all that about? And so I explained to her the whole situation. And so I was talking about that earlier today, too. So, yeah, I think I probably did mess that up.
It's like a jump back in time, like, but 6, 7 years ago.
It is. Well, and then we start talking about, like, celebration conventions and all that kind of stuff. You know, there is a surprise connection to Star Wars in today's discussions here with the stuff we're going to review.
Really?
And it's a deep dive too. Like it's something that very, very few people would figure out on their own. So if anybody else gets to it before I mention it, I will be impressed.
Okay. Well, let's kind of dive into what the new stuff is we've seen lately. Probably the biggest thing on our list right now, I think, is going to be Gunpowder Milkshake on Netflix.
Yeah, as far as it's something we've all seen. Yeah.
Right. This was it Karen Gillan is the lead of this action movie, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it much else. It's not a character drama.
No, it's not. I'm curious of what you guys both thought. Tim, why don't we start with you? What did you think of this? Now, this was a made-for-theatrical release movie that was picked up by Netflix during the pandemic, right?
Yes. I thought this movie was a lot of fun. Was it great? No, but it was a fun movie, good action-y kind of stuff. It was kind of a cross between like John Wick and
any Zack Snyder film?
Yeah, Zack Snyder.
Sucker Punch.
Specifically, I'm thinking of, he did two of them, I believe. Second one had Ava Green in it. Shocker that, you know.
How is there an Ava Green movie? You don't know what the title of it is, Tim.
I know.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Ava's going to be very upset with you.
She is.
She might not talk to you.
I was going
to
say, she might not.
Yeah. So while Eric's looking it up, I mean, I'll kind of jump on here too and say that, I mean, while it was a fun movie, I was a little bit let down by, I expected more from it, I think. I think I wanted something more original and more unique, whereas this didn't really deliver on that. It felt like it was a poor man's John Wick with a female cast.
What I appreciated with it, though, is that it didn't take itself seriously. And I think that
Sin City?
That might be. Yeah, Sin City. Yeah, thank you. For some reason, that wasn't coming out of my head. And Sin City, you know, doesn't take itself seriously. Quite honestly, John Wick, even though John Wick, like, superficially takes itself seriously, but really when you dig into it, like, it doesn't. I mean, it's this ridiculous thing where this dude takes so much of a beating, yet still gets up and keeps giving it. And that was just a lot of what we saw. It's just kind of one of these fun shoot 'em up kinds of movies with a little bit of story to it. I liked it. I it's nothing cerebral. I just thought it was a good time.
Okay. Eric?
Are we going to cover it on Movie Chatter?
I don't know. Are we?
I think we are.
We talked about it.
There are some movies where you have to suspend disbelief. And there are certain movies that kind of define the world that they operate in, and you have to say, okay, I'll just accept that that's the world it operates in. So, you know, John Wick, there being a hotel full of assassins where they don't touch each other on the property and stuff like that. Like, okay, it's not that much of a stretch. I kind of get it. Okay. And then you get some movies that are a little bit more outrageous. And it's like, well, that's a little tougher, but okay. And then you get movies that like Smoke and Aces and Shoot 'Em Up, and where everything is this like super over the top video gamey sort of thing. And I have a hard time with those. And then when you, if you were to take something like that and remove the video gamey part and try to make it like stylistically artistic instead, then it, like, it gets even worse because you're taking apart the only thing that did match that genre and replacing it with something that does not match that genre. And so something like Sucker Punch by Zack Snyder, I think, does a really good job of being an action movie that is artistic, but it's because of the style, kind of the dreamscape sort of nature of the storytelling. And then also, there's a whole thing that's actual character development and actual story and et cetera. And this movie kind of felt like it was trying to be that level of creative expressionism and just fell flat. And it was so, the suspension of disbelief was so distracting to me. And I guess after movies like John Wick and anything Michael Bay's ever done, and most of the Marvel movies, fight scenes and action scenes, I enjoy them. If they're done well, but I'm no longer impressed with them. And I do thoroughly enjoy them, don't get me wrong. But they're no longer something that, oh my gosh, you never see something like that. Well, yeah, you do, about every 3 weeks. Like, even the Netflix exclusive movies, you see that every, you know, Six Underground. And what was the one with Charlize Theron in it?
The Old Guard.
The Old Guard. And, you know, and I could go on. It's just so common. So that's not enough to carry a movie anymore. And the rest of this movie, I thought, fell flat. The hospital was ridiculous. The library was just stupid. Like, it just, yeah. And so I had a hard time having fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt the world building was, you know, either you take yourself a little bit more seriously than you did, or it didn't kind of work.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that being said, I mean, you know, Karen did a fantastic job in the role she played. You know, the movie was fun enough that I'm like, okay, it was good. I'm never going to watch it again, but, you know, I had a good time watching it.
Joe said, I posted a screenshot of the wiki page in Discord. Joe. Thank you.
For milkshake. Joe. Gunpowder milkshake.
No, he means my stuff from the Force cast. It's okay. We love you,
hey,
Joe.
Everything on the internet stays.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm going to be able to get rid of it, so that's fine.
Oh, that's such an old picture too.
Oh, I know, it's a horrible picture. And I'm like way heavier too. I like literally I'm 100 pounds heavier in that picture. So anyhow. Yeah, gunpowder milkshake.
Gunpowder milkshake.
Not really great for me. I did see some other new things, though. I don't know if you guys saw any of them, so I kind of want to spit them out real quick because they are new prominent things, one of which was Space Jam, A New Legacy. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Unfortunately, none of us have seen Old or Snake Eyes.
I've seen the Old Legacy.
This weekend. So hopefully by next weekend, we'll be able to review those for you. But you never saw Space Jam 1, huh?
No, okay. Never did.
Tim, what about you?
I probably saw part of it a long time ago and deeply regretted it.
Good. You did a better job of...
So I didn't sign on to watch this trash that you're talking about right now.
You did a better job of pushing it out of your brain than I did. I've still spent years working on that. I thought... Now, keep in mind, I'm not a sports guy. I appreciate Michael Jordan. I've seen some of his games. Watched the documentary, which was phenomenal, which is on Netflix right now. It was an HBO production. I have never seen a single game with LeBron James in it. I respect that he's really good. I don't know anything about him. This second movie was so far beyond the first. So much better than the first. I watched it because, again, I knew my son was going to watch it, and I wanted a way to kind of connect with him. This was so much better than the first one. Like, the first one, I cringe just even thinking about it, and I hate having to sit through it for any reason. And this one was okay. Like, it had some heart to it. The acting was pretty good. There was character development. There was a good story about him connecting with his son. Don Cheadle played the villain and did a really good job with it. There was a lot of fan service with including other franchises throughout different things, but honestly, it was a lot better that than all of the filler that was in the first movie. I thought the basketball scenes in this were more interesting and kind of did more to promote the story they were doing. Now, it's a simple story. It's a family movie, so, you know, nothing too complex, but I thought it was really good. Now, to be fair, Mike from various other shows on the network, DC Talk, Caped Chronicles, etc., I want to be fair to him and throw out that he and I kind of politely and in a very friendly way threw down in Discord, and he hated it and thought the first one was way better. So you're going to find people on both sides of the fence here. So, you know, Mike, I'm throwing that out for you on your behalf. I emphatically disagree with you, but it's, you know, it's a legitimate perspective. And so people are going to probably prefer one over the other. But I think that the second one is good enough to actually be recommendable. So I'm surprised to say that, but yeah, it was good. We mentioned Old and Snake Eyes, which just came out this weekend, and Joe in the chat room said Old was good. I've heard some mixed things on it, but a lot of people said this is kind of a throwback to early M. Night Shyamalan movies. So
good to know.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Oh,
so yeah. I was going to say, another thing I watched, I think that you had mentioned was coming out, was Leverage Redemption.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, I'm 3 episodes in now, I think, on that, and I'm loving it. It took me a bit to get used to it. It didn't feel as fun as the original.
The first episode,
I think missing
some ramping up.
The main character again was a bit to get used to. But yeah, no, it's a great, great, great series again. I'm glad they brought that back.
Yeah. And it's nice to see all of the characters except just, who is it? Timothy Hutton?
Timothy Hutton, yeah.
So we don't get him. We do get Noah Wiley, who, it's a different role for Noah Wiley than I'm used to.
Yeah, I mean, he's older now, so.
Well, but it's also, he's a little less alpha a character. Like, I'm used to him in, I never watched ER, but I loved Falling Skies.
Yeah. Yeah, Falling Skies is great.
Incredible series, which, by the way, is on HBO Max right now. And I've started a rewatch of it. I will always go back and just as a general in the background thing, there are certain shows I will do over and over again. Babylon 5, Falling Skies. There's one called Jeremiah by the creator of Babylon 5. It's a post-apocalyptic show. Incredible. But Noah Wiley in this was a little more, like, he's less competent. He's kind of like the new guy at this.
And I think he's going to grow into that spot on the team, right? Because he's not a member of the original team, so he's kind of finding his way in there, and they're accepting him a little bit.
So he's a lawyer character who has participated in screwing people over in the past, and he's kind of trying to seek redemption for that. So there are things that he has access to as a lawyer that are able to help the team out in ways they wouldn't otherwise have. So it's really good. And we talked about it before. Leverage itself is just, it's an incredible show. It holds up well. It's a feel-good show too. Like, it's got good action and complex heist sorts of things, but it's a feel-good show, and you don't get many of those right now. Leverage Redemption, I agree with you, Lou. It's solid. It's definitely a good show. What else? Oh, so Masters of the Universe is now out on Netflix. Kevin Smith did a 5-episode sequel to the original 1980s Masters of the Universe, like He-Man.
Wow.
Were you guys into that at all when you were kids, or Lou, when totally. You were in college?
Yeah. Hey,
wow. Yes. Yeah. I was, I enjoyed it quite okay. a bit.
And Lou, were you?
Yeah. Between classes. Yeah. I was able to, you know, catch a break.
Yeah, you schedule your classes around.
I was
around
deeply disappointed by the Dolph Lundgren movie.
Yeah, so to be clear, not talking about the live action movie. That was one franchise I was not into as a kid. My father was ultra conservative religious, and so something like Skeletor as a bad guy, he's like, nope, satanic, not getting into it. And that was fine because honestly, I didn't really have an interest in it otherwise. So for me, I recognize 90% of the characters, so there's a lot of fan service in it, right down to some of the cheesy vehicles and stuff. But I don't have any nostalgia for it. The first episode I thought was horrible. Just all due respect to Kevin Smith. Listen, I love Kevin Smith. Like, I legitimately almost idolize him, and yet I don't like most of his movies. It's weird. Like, I don't even get it. So I hate speaking ill of anything he does because I love the guy. Mm. The first episode was really rough. The rest of the series, though, wasn't bad. Like, it's
okay.
It's got kind of an interesting premise. And once things get going at the end of the first episode, it's good. I thought the end was a little bit of a cheat, and we're clearly getting a second season. We have to.
If it gets renewed.
If it doesn't, there's going to be a lot of pissed off fans.
So in Tim, since you're a big fan, did you happen to see that Hallmark is releasing a Castle Grayskull ornament?
No, I didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of sold out already online.
Of course. Yeah, because it's been out for 10 minutes. Of course, so of course it sold out.
Yeah. It was part of their Christmas in July thing. They released it. It looks pretty cool.
Cool.
But I wasn't that big of a fan, so I didn't jump on that.
Are they doing a Christmas in August for the people who still want to get one? In September and October?
Gotta go to eBay now, I think.
I hate the current culture of collectibles. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion. Yes. I love how they made the door, the castle door, too small for the action figures. Yeah. Yeah, that was some poor planning, too. It was interesting how they integrated some of the worst designed toys ever into this series, though. I would say if you're a He-Man fan, watch it. If you're not, if you have a familiarity with it, then maybe it'd be interesting. If you don't, like, don't bother. There's nothing there for you if you don't have any nostalgia for it. One other thing that I just watched today that I want to throw out there, and again, I'm only listing these off because these are the newest things we have on the list for this weekend. You guys saw Turner and Hooch with Tom Hanks?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah? What'd you guys think
good
of it?
Movie. A lot of fun.
Movie, like, from back in, what, late 80s?
Yeah, I remember it being good. I mean, I think I only watched it the once, but yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Disney Plus has a series now, and it is based on his son, who is now a police officer, I guess detective, police detective, still young, still like a rookie detective. And long story short, his father kind of sticks him with a dog, also named Hooch, looks like Hooch, to kind of help him find his place in life, so to speak. And as you would expect, antics ensue, and it looks very formulaic. And but I watched the first episode today and liked it enough to start in on the second one. I was surprised. It's really good. It's definitely family fare. But for family fare, it was kind of intense, actually, in some scenes. Like, I would let my son watch it, but I think it would actually hold his interest, which is good. I think it is a fitting and respectful continuation of the movie. I've got nothing bad to say about it. It's good. Okay. If you're looking for something to watch, you can't go wrong with it. It's pretty good. It also has Vanessa Lungis in it. You guys know who Vanessa Lungis is?
No, not by name, okay. No.
Aside from being a slight celebrity crush of mine, she does the voice of one of the characters in the Lego Freemaker Chronicles, the Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So there's your very, very inside baseball connection to Star Wars there for the episode.
Oh, that's what you promised.
That's what I promised at the top.
That was
worth hanging in there for,
wasn't
it? That
was not worth... No, it was not.
Hey, nope, the Freemaker Chronicles was supposed to be really good. A lot of people liked it.
It was supposed to be
and
really
Vanessa
good.
And Vanessa Lungis is good. And she's good in this series, too. So there you go.
Lou, please save us.
Well, I got something
What's wrong with that?
Better. So poking around on Amazon Prime Video, and you get the, check this out, because they think I might like it. I got to break up with Amazon Prime, because they don't really know me, I don't think.
Their recommendation algorithm is a work in progress, or I hope it's progressing.
So I started watching a series called You Are Wanted. It's a German production, so it's German language dubbed into English, which is horrible to begin with. And then when you put the subtitles on, do something about watching the subtitles on, the subtitles don't match the English translation. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. And you can, I know what you're trying to say, but no, that's not the way it was supposed to be said. And so there's that barrier, which is tough, but it's the main character is a hotel. I don't know if he's a manager or not, but he gets somehow framed as being part of a online hacking terrorist group, and it's high tech. It's supposed to be a thriller, but I watched two episodes just to make sure I really didn't like it, and I really didn't like it. So I can't really promote that, but
hey, you gave it a fair chance.
Public service, don't watch it. Unless you speak German fluently and watch it in the German language, it might be better. I imagine it probably would be.
Well, so we could ask Lila. See what she thinks.
There we go, For sure to watch a couple episodes.
Oh, speaking of which, Lou, and Tim, so you can pass it on to Robin, we need to have a meeting soon about our new podcast project. Because I'm anxious to start that. We've got a long list of things that we could jump into. So.
Sure.
Tim, since Lou's taken a sip of something, and I wish I had a good joke because like him almost spitting up his drink is classic. It's more of a movie chatter thing though. So HBO Max, I didn't realize this was even coming. And Friday night, I think, I saw that there was a documentary on Woodstock 99, which was the 30-year anniversary of the Woodstock Music Festival. And specifically this documentary was about what a mess it was. And it focused on a lot of different aspects of it, from the bad planning to the social commentary of like the performers and kind of what original Woodstock represented versus what this represented, to the demographic of the attendees, to some of the sexual assault that happened there. And then also to the kind of the riot aspect of it, which required first responders come in. And immediately, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, okay, two things. Number one, I'm watching it right now, and number two, the second I'm done with it, I'm texting Tim. And I might have even texted you before I finished it. I don't recall.
Yes.
Okay, I think that's right, because I was like 39 minutes into it. And I said, yeah, this is exactly, because I wanted, documentaries are rough sometimes, because sometimes they have an agenda or things like that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to see, okay, is this going to be legit or not? And it seemed legit. And I'm like, okay, contacting Tim, you got to watch it. And you got to tell me, like, I know it's not going to focus as much on what the reason is I'm contacting you about it, but I want to know if it's legit. And it's because, Tim, you were actually working in emergency management at the time and you were there, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, tell us a little bit. You don't have to go into the whole history of, you can tell us as much as you want, because your stories about it are awesome. Chat room, Tim was there. But tell us a little bit about, give some context for that, and then tell us, what you thought of the documentary.
Yeah. So basically the nitty gritty of my role there. This was very early in my career in emergency management. Leading into the event, I was in charge of the public safety planning aspect of this. So this is bringing together state, county, local agencies, some private sector, some nonprofit.
I should also point out,
even working with, yeah.
And Tim already knows this, but for the sake of the audience, we are going to have to be a little careful about naming specific people and stuff because we don't want to get sued.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then even some federal entities, and so pulling them together to plan for things. And so the public safety planning was basically covered any of the hazards that could be there. So like there's a large dam that's a few miles away from the location where it was. So we planned for a dam failure. Probably wasn't going to happen. But nonetheless, we, you know, pulled together some planning for that. We were planning for adverse weather, like a tornado or something like that. And all the way through up to and including civil unrest. During the event itself, I worked the night shift in the command post, which was offsite, about a mile away.
As it would be. So to be clear,
from the event,
Tim was not assigned to like on-site security or something. This was more of a local right. government sort of jurisdictional thing.
Yeah. So that this was a much bigger picture type of thing. Right. And my job actually was to, because I had worked with those agencies in the planning aspects of it, again, for public safety, not planning, you know, who was going to be on stage at what time or any of that kind of stuff. We weren't responsible for the on-site security. We weren't responsible for the on-site EMS. None of those types of things. We dealt with all the public safety stuff, which was primarily off-site. And then if there was a requirement for an on-site response.
If I could interrupt for just one second, I do love listening to Tim talk about this kind of planning and kind of what if scenario when he's like, okay, so you know, what if the dam failed? And okay, not gonna happen, but what if it failed? And it's like, oh, what if this happened? Then he goes into more detail and he goes, so what if the dam failed and a tornado came through and there's a fire? It's like, come on.
Those are the best scenarios. So when the fires broke out, I know the first thing in Tim's head is, what if we opened up the dams?
The water would put out the fire.
Yep.
There you go.
And fix the rioting.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, because of my work before the event and doing all that planning, my main responsibility during the event was basically continuing that work. And so on behalf of the incident commanders, we had a unified command of state police and the county health department. Why the county health department? Because they actually had to issue a permit for the event to take place, which is based upon public health types of things. That permit happened to be based on a specific attendance number, which there is no official documentation of what the real attendance number was because we weren't responsible for it. But we're pretty sure that the actual attendance was somewhere around 100,000 people more than what the promoter had committed to, which meant that there wasn't enough infrastructure there to support this. And all that infrastructure in terms of potable water and bathrooms and all that kind of stuff was all temporary infrastructure. And that created for a period of 4 days, I think it was the fourth largest city in the state of New York. So just, I mean, that kind of helps, I think, put it in perspective that we created, not we, they, the promoters, created this massive city for 4 days, temporary basis.
Now, when I was up visiting you and I was asking about Syracuse wasn't even in like the top five, was it?
I don't think they are. No, they're like six or seven.
You're creating, when you're saying like the second or third largest city in New York State, like that's a big deal.
It's big.
That's big, crazy big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially when you think about all the services that exist in an actual city.
Right.
And how these things.
How many bathrooms are in an, like,
and all that
actually
kind of stuff.
In Syracuse? Yeah. I mean, the mall we went to has more bathrooms than this festival did.
Yeah.
Even with the Porta Johns.
So the documentary was, I think, pretty spot on. I mean, there were some takes of some of the people that they interviewed that I didn't completely agree with. There were a couple I didn't at all.
Which is to be expected. You know, they were going to get both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the promoters were very much into blaming everybody else for what happened in the end. And really what it comes down to, and along with being an emergency manager, I study a lot of it. I teach it. So much of emergency management comes down to sociology. And it just, it's simply human behavior. So, you know, without digging into like all these different nuances, it's human behavior. And it doesn't matter if it's a tornado, where what are people going to do when it happens?
Right.
But also considering for the years prior to that tornado, what are people doing to mitigate that risk and prepare for it if and when it happens and that kind of stuff. But then when you have something that is fundamentally socially driven, like this event and the rioting that happened at this event, even though there was an external factor of high heat, but everything else was socially driven. The promoters drove a lot of it in terms of their mandated pricing of bottled water, which was abnormally high. Their lack of ability to provide adequate security, their lack of ability to provide adequate services, allowing, again, like I said, several thousands more people onto that footprint than what it was certified for, all that kind of stuff. So lots and lots of issues there. Then you take a look at the demographics of the attendees that were there. You had a lot of, it was primarily, and they pointed out really well in the documentary, it was young white males who apparently were angry about something. I'm not quite sure how basically the most entitled population in the United States could be angry about
something.
Not
even sure if they knew what they were angry about.
No.
And a lot of the acts were also, like, that was their demographic audience, where it was all about people being angry for no particular reason.
Yeah. So they were promoting a lot of that anger. And I mean, in terms of in the moment being angry about things, the overpriced water, the failing infrastructure, sure, all that stuff. Yes, absolutely. There was something there to be angry about, not justifying the rioting, obviously. Kind of in terms of the overall demographic, there were so many people just saying, oh, well, you know, these are angry 22-year-old white men. What in the world are they angry about? Come on. So there were some things there. Basically what the documentary covered in terms of the whole process of this thing and a lot of the environment and all that, it was pretty accurate. And there were some things that were, they brought back a lot of memories, like certain things like, hey, I was there when this happened. I was, you know, in this other place when this happened. When they were talking about corn coming out, that was the time that during the event itself, prior to the riots, that I was actually in the venue. Like I said, our command post was like a mile away. This was that was the time that I was in the venue, and I remember that. And I'm a big corn fan, so I was really excited about that too. They did have a camera shot, one of the camera shots toward the end, in term when they showed all the law enforcement going into the venue. There was an overhead shot that they had of a police car that was in the venue. And to my knowledge, there's only one police car that actually did drive into that venue, and I was in it.
So you were in the documentary.
It was me and the lieutenant who was in charge of that detail, and I went in with him.
I was looking for you, like, in the background during those scenes, and didn't see you, but you had a roof over your head. That's cheating, Tim. Yeah.
So it's even though this was, you know, so considerably far back, it is something that I still use as a case study.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. I mean, I do teaching at police academies and such. And, especially here locally, because the event happened 20 minutes away from where mm-hmm. I live. There's a lot of relevance to bring out to people, because to be dealing with large events is not abnormal. Obviously, something that big is considerable, but a lot of the lessons learned can still be applied to smaller events. I can literally talk about this thing for hours.
I thought it was.
Yeah, the documentary was pretty
good. It's actually part of a series of documentaries HBO's doing. It's called Music Box, and they've got, it looks like maybe 5 or 6 episodes coming, but this is the first one. It's a full-length documentary, though. It's like, what, an hour 40?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Worth the watch.
Yeah. I would dare say that so it seemed to be maybe 4 or 5 different topics, maybe, covered throughout the documentary. And I would say you could take any one of them and do a whole 2-hour documentary on it. The riot at the end, or the sexual assault, or this kind of sociological sense of entitlement and the audience members feeling like they're owed something, or the logistical planning of it and the $4 bottles of water, or the effect that certain artists had on taking a volatile crowd and arguably actually making inciting them to violence. What's that?
I said making them more volatile.
Yeah, exacerbating the situation.
And that's the thing that happens at a lot of those kind of events. There was a concert years ago. It was Metallica and Guns N' Roses, I think it was. It was the show where James Hetfield stepped into the plasma fire.
Oh yeah,
and burned himself. And you know, Guns N' Roses could have came out, played with Metallica, you know, but no, they refused to go on stage, you know, and they had thousands of angry fans that wanted something and just incited them to be even more violent than they were already. So, you know, there's ways to diffuse things and ways to be nice about stuff, but yeah, it's just when you have bad data going into something like Woodstock 99, where they don't know what the crowd was. I mean, it's like, how do you plan for that? You can't plan on bad data.
Yeah. It's a good documentary. We'll leave it at that. You should watch it, and if you do, let us know what you think. We would be very interested in your opinions on it. A couple of other documentaries came out this weekend as well, and I think maybe they're by the same people. One is owned by Netflix, one is owned by Disney Plus, and if you watch them, the structure is identical, like right down to the way the narrators are narrating around the individual people. So one is The Movies That Made Us. The second season, third season, new season came out. They're covering, the first one is Back to the Future. They're doing Jurassic Park. I forget what the other two movies are. So I watched the Back to the Future one, and, it was interesting. I already knew quite a bit of it because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the whole Eric Stoltz being cast first and then them having to reshoot like 60% of the film and et cetera. But it's a really good series. I highly recommend it. And then separate from that, Disney Plus now has a similar series called Behind the Attractions. So they've got one episode that covers the Jungle Cruise ride. And they've got The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, doing like some interview stuff about it too, because he's in the upcoming movie. He's not talking about the movie, he's talking about the ride and like his experiences growing up at Disney World and stuff. But it's pretty good. I skipped the Haunted Mansion one because I've seen countless videos and all that. But they've got Tower of Terror, they got Star Tours, and then with a little bit toward the end about Batuu. It's Star Wars and the place is Batuu, but like the Star Wars land is called
Galaxy's Edge.
Thank you.
I
just failed as a Star Wars fan. Yeah, I didn't like even know how to phrase a question. They had a little bit on Galaxy's Edge at the end of it, but a lot of it was Star Tours and like how they kind of changed it up over the years and how they came up with the motion simulator thing, because that was brand new technology at the time. It's really good stuff. It's
You mentioned The Rock and documentaries, and Disney's got another one out that just popped up on when I was in Disney Plus the other day. called Stuntman.
Yeah, how is that?
It feels like an older documentary. I haven't finished that. I'm about halfway through it. It feels like an older documentary that, like, it was filmed a while ago and then just put out now. But it's decent. I mean, it's kind of highlighting the career of a stuntman who, you know, idolized Evel Knievel back in the day and wanted to recreate his Snake River Canyon jump.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
Okay. I saw the trailer.
Not political, or anything, but pretty good.
I actually also had a couple of other documentaries. It kind of seemed to be the week of documentaries. Yeah. One of them, it's called Behind Black Widow. It's about Heidi Moneymaker, who is the stunt actress for Scarlett Johansson. And she basically has been ScarJo's stunt actress for every MCU film from Iron Man 2 forward.
Hmm.
It's on ESPN Plus, so there may be some accessibility issues. I know a lot of people don't have it. It was about an hour long. Really, really well done. Took a really interesting dive into kind of this whole world of of stunt acting and everything that's involved in it. And it was, I gotta say, it was really timely. And I'm gonna say so now, and this is actually kind of the first announcement of it on the network. Next week on Guardians of the MCU, we are going to have the stunt actress for Sophia DiMartino, who played Sylvie on Loki.
Nice.
Nice. So we're going to be interviewing her. So it was really cool to kind of watch this and get a little bit more of that insight, because it's kind of a world that I think a lot of us really aren't that familiar with. And so just to kind of see how it comes together, usually we just kind of see little glimpses of it and like a behind the scenes type of thing. But this was really all about it, and it was really interesting. The other documentary is a documentary series, which has been running on CNN weekly, called History of the Sitcom.
Yeah, how is that?
Highly recommend.
Yeah,
is that good?
Yeah?
Okay. It is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Highly recommend. They're basically going through the years, and it's not necessarily in chronological order because they're also hitting topics.
Okay.
So, like, each show will hit a certain topic in the history of sitcoms, and it will then go through, you know, whatever sitcoms happen to highlight that particular topic. Really good, very contemporary, great interviews with actors and writers and directors and all that stuff, and people who do commentary on such things. They didn't ask any of us at Random Chatter, whatever.
It's okay. We forgive you.
Yeah. Yeah, highly recommend.
Okay. You know, they've got really good commentaries or documentaries there too. I've seen they did like each of the different decades, like 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. They did on movies through the years. They make good series like that, and like really applicable to our audience, our demographic here at Random Chatter. So if you haven't checked those out,
yeah,
by all means.
It's funny because you don't think of going to CNN as a place for documentaries, but
especially on the entertainment industry.
Right.
And the only thing challenging with CNN, and I remember when Anthony Bourdain was around, his last shows were running on CNN. And the challenge being is that when there's big news, CNN, as they do, because that's what they're centered on, they go into full-on news mode.
True.
And so if they're doing continued coverage of something, any of their planned shows are booted. Yeah. And I found that they sometimes weren't even shuffling them. Like if episode 3 was supposed to run tonight and episode 4 runs next week, if something precludes episode 3, next week you're getting episode 4.
Oh, really?
Because that's what they had planned. Yeah, I found them doing it with that. And it's not often that they do reruns of things. They will. But not often. So it can be a little challenging.
Yeah.
They may have, I've never checked. I mean, I'm sure there's like a CNN on demand that is part of your cable package or dish or something like that, that probably has a lot of these like series in there or something.
Yeah, I think you can go back.
So you can probably catch up that way. But
yeah. Hmm. You know, you mentioned Marvel earlier. Marvel Studios Disassembled came out with a Loki finale episode. Well, it wasn't just the finale, but like it included that. really good, as they always are.
It was really neat because it was done different from any of the other things that have been done. It was with Tom Hiddleston doing this narration over it. It made it very dramatic.
Yes.
So it's like this behind the scenes thing that had this drama to it, and they were kind of telling their own story as they wove through it. It wasn't just this, you know, rapid fire thing of behind the scenes stuff, which obviously we know from what they've done with Star Wars and what they've done with Marvel before, that's not their thing. That's not what they do. But this was even a very different formula than what they've done in the past. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. Really good, very insightful stuff.
Yeah.
And John and Sheba reviewed that on MCU TV yesterday. And actually, I just have to get the episode out. I'll have it out tomorrow for everybody.
Good. The only other thing I can think of that I saw that's not something we've talked about again in the past, Netflix came out with a series, I think it was last year, called Living With Yourself, starring Paul Rudd, where he is depressed, he's not doing well at work, and one of his coworkers recommends he goes to this spa because his coworker is like doing great and like coming up with all these pitches for this marketing stuff that they do, and like having women fall all over him and all this kind of stuff. And you know, Paul Rudd's marriage is kind of like on the rocks and stuff. And so anyway, he decides to go and check out this spa. And this isn't really a spoiler because it's all in the first episode. He ends up with a clone of himself. So you could argue that it harkens back to things like Multiplicity from back in the late 80s, early 90s or something like that with Michael Keaton. It really didn't feel like that, though. It felt very different. And it's billed as a comedy, but it's serious enough that even the funny parts are a little hard to laugh at. Not that it's like overly dark. I haven't gotten all the way through the first season yet, but it's the tone is serious, even if there are some comedic moments in it. Paul Rudd, he nails everything he's in. He's a really good actor and more than just a comedian. Like, he actually has dramatic acting chops too. So far I'd recommend it. I'm not all the way through it. I'm maybe like four or five episodes, but I'd say it's worth checking out. Cool. That's all I've got.
I think that's all I've got as well.
Okay.
The only other thing I have is, was a movie on HBO Max, a new release called No Sudden Move. This had Brendan Fraser, Don Cheadle, Benicio Del Toro.
Why does that sound familiar?
It was fun.
Not great.
It was a crime drama. It was set in 1950s Detroit, and apparently based on a true story of different people who were set to steal certain documents that had to do with the automotive industry. And that part of it was interesting. It was a slow moving film, but it had some good nuance to it, and it had some interesting twists. I don't know how much of it was accurate in terms of what actually happened versus what ended up being dramatized. But it was fine. It was nothing terribly exciting, but not bad.
Okay. All right. Well, that's not too bad. I thought we'd be like over an hour. And while we normally shoot for 20 or 30 minutes, we had a lot of stuff to cover today, and we got by in 50.
We did. Yeah. Not bad.
Not too bad. Cool. All right. Well, I guess we should wrap up then. That's going to do it for this episode of Random Chatter. Thank you for sticking out there with us, especially people there in the chat room. If you'd like to catch our live shows, you can go to randomchatter.com/YouTube, hit the subscribe and like button, and click that little bell button for notifications, and you'll get to be notified automatically anytime we go live or post new episodes. So check that out. Go to randomchatter.com/escapehatch, and that will get you a direct invitation link to the Discord server we hang out in, where apparently, thanks again, Joe, for posting that wiki page. I'm literally 100 pounds heavier in that picture. That's really disturbing.
The great thing is you should be able to update it, right?
Probably. It so it's on, public, I think, Wikia. It's not Wikipedia, so it's like that fan site.
Oh, okay.
I might not have access to change it. I don't know. Mm. Or maybe if I once did through the Forcecast, maybe my account still has permissions. I should look into that. Go in and edit it. Eric is the most awesomest person in the history of awesome people. All right, that's going to do it. Stick around, people in the live chat. We're going to do a quick news show, I think. And otherwise, we will see you again for Movie Chatter on Tuesday and Random Chatter and Force Chatter next Sunday night.